5 UTC right after the international.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the March 9th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. South African billionaire Patrice Motsepe is poised to become the new head of African football on Friday in Rabat, Morocco. Motsepe's path to the presidency of African football was cleared after a deal brokered by FIFA president Gianni Infantino. Motsepe's three rivals, Jacques Anouma of Ivory Coast, Augustine Senghor of Senegal, and Ahmed Yahya of Mauritania, withdrew their presidential bids over the weekend. And Motsepe's final hurdle was cleared Monday when the Court of Arbitration for Sport upheld a ban on CAF president Ahmad Ahmad for corruption, although reducing his suspension from 5 to 2 years. Patrice Motsepe is now expected to be crowned CAF president Friday when the elections take place in Morocco. The 59-year-old Motsepe is the founder and executive chairman of African Rainbow Minerals, which has operations to mine gold, platinum, coal, and ferrous metals. He's also the owner of the South African football club Mamelodi Sundowns. In Johannesburg recently, Motsepe announced his platform to improve African football. Samson Omale reports.
Patrice Motsepe from South Africa launched his 10-point manifesto, which he tagged Building African Football to be the Best in the World. Patrice Motsepe says investment in development, growth, global competitiveness, and the sustainability of football in African countries are at the heart of building African football to become the best in the world.
Governance, transparency, ethics, auditing global best practices. Now, you've got to be very careful. You can't hope to be a president of an organization and you spend most of your time talking down or criticizing. So my starting point is to pay my respects to President Isaiah to say, good work. And to pay my respect to Ahmad and the leadership of CAF, the CAF Exco. The starting point is to say, let's all work together and improve on those areas where there are weaknesses. The governance policies of FIFA are an excellent guide, and of course we've got to comply with them. But the objective must be global best practices. We will get support and partnerships from the private sector when we show them, come, let's talk about how do we make it more transparent, more compliant with governance, more compliance with auditing, global best practices. And they will support. You know, the way we run the AFCON, the way we run the Champions League, we've got to increase the prize money.
The mining billionaire revealed that good governance, global best practices, investment in African football infrastructure, increasing prize money and statutory reforms will be high on his agenda.
There are many companies all over the world who wants to give money to football, but they want to be comfortable that the money will not go into the pocket of the leadership of football, and that the money will indeed be used to develop, to grow, to contribute towards the improvement in the quality of football in Africa. Within the first 9 to 12 months, I'm going to visit every single African country, everyone, and sit down with the leadership and talk about what are the priority development and growth projects? Prize money for winning the Champions League. We've got to increase it. And we can increase it because, we can pay the players more. And we can use some of that money to help us with the transport and all of the other expenses. So we've got to increase the prize money.
It's back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Samson. That's Samson Omale.
Sporting greetings.
This is Emmanuel Amuneke, former Nigerian player, former Tanzanian coach. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Many thanks. Remain blessed and stay safe. God bless you.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Fali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Nigeria Football Federation President Amaju Pinnick is hoping to win a seat on the FIFA Council at the CAF Congress on Friday in Rabat, Morocco. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Pinnick said he's grateful for the support he's received from the Nigerian government.
I'd like to thank the federal government for backing me. You know, that the solid backing given to me by the federal government is huge. It's exactly what I have always craved for, so that people will not know that I'm working in isolation. I'm aspiring in isolation. The government came out officially to do this. Behind, they've been doing it for the past. We've been working together for the past 3 months, trying to reach out to as many MEs as possible on my behalf, you know, through the country's diplomatic channels. And we believe that my being in the FIFA Council will not just elevate the status of Nigeria, but will give us further global reckoning. And I think this is basically it, you know. First, my point of duty is to FIFA, clearly to support the leadership of FIFA, the aspiration, the dream, how to make everything in FIFA come to reality. My loyalty to the leadership will be 100%. And basically, to also look at ways of doing things objectively and projecting the image of the continent is my next point of duty, you know.
If you win a seat on the FIFA Council, what should Nigeria and indeed Africa expect from you as their representative, in the World Football Governing Body?
Being elected into the FIFA Council is done by the members' association, not Nigeria. So honestly, Africa will come second in terms of priority, because we have to look at how to take football from where it is today to a very glorious end, or leave it better where we eventually leave the scene.
Can you tell Sunny Side of Sports listeners your choice for Patrice Motsepe to become the next president of the Confederation of African Football?
We experimented 4 years ago, and today it has done so, and we take responsibility, certainly because we're part of it, even though we're sidelined, and all our advice and we're thrown away, you know. But definitely, we'll also be part of the people that take responsibility. But it has really reopened a new vista for us. And we have learned a lot of lessons, a very bitter lesson. And that's why we're excited with Patrice Motsepe as, so to speak, as the president-elect of CAF, because at the moment he's the only one that is there. And the Think Africa campaign, I use the word Think Africa campaign, enabled the other contestants to pull out, because the thing is Think Africa, you know. And today we have somebody that is very passionate about football, somebody that has been in football for 20 years, owned one of the highest paying football clubs in the continent, one of also the most successful clubs in the continent, a man that has business presence in over 40 countries, a man that believes in Africa, he believes in African unity, he believes in projecting, providing for Africa, and also protecting the continent. So I believe we've gotten it right. This is not an experiment. This is real. And in the next 4 years, definitely we'll see some kind of difference, you know, because we are starting on a very weak note. But I believe we're going to build from there build a very solid foundation, and Africa, at the end of the day, will benefit tremendously from his leadership, and we are going to give him 100% support.
That's Amaju Pinnick, the president of the Nigeria Football Federation, and he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Rabat, Morocco.
My name is Amaju Marvin Pinnick, president of Nigerian Football Federation, first vice president of CAF, and a member of the organizing committee for FIFA competitions. I want to say a big shout out to the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you very much.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to Ndumbulu and Makossa to Kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. Still on the African football beat, the Emergency Committee of the Confederation of African Football has canceled the Under-17 Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Morocco. The decision was taken only 5 days before the 12-team boys competition was scheduled to kick off. CAF said the resurgence of the COVID-19 pandemic and increased restrictions on international travel both factored into the cancellation. Ghana lifted the Under-20 Africa Cup over the weekend in Mauritania, beating Uganda 2-0 in the final. Meanwhile, Yao Afusu-Larbi recently caught up with a now-retired Ghanaian footballer who scored a goal at the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to Yao's feature. Sporty greetings, Yao.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The 60s were Ghana's glory years in football. The organization of the Black Stars, trophy wins, that 13-0 win against Kenya in Nairobi, and many more. Known wildly as the Brazilians of African football, Ghana was the ideal African football country. All of it orchestrated by a group whose names have been etched into the very fabric of football in this country. Wilberforce Nfum, Agrifin, Reverend Osei Kofi, and Kofi Pare are names that ring bells. But there is one man among that crop whose name is criminally missing. His legacy buried in the sands of time. In 1965, he was flown alone by the then president, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, to Tunis to play in the Africa Cup of Nations after he missed the flight due to personal reasons. The man, Amusa Gbadamosi.
He was a genius. I saw him. People who don't see, who have not seen Amusa will never agree on what I'm saying. Yeah. We produce great players like Abedi, Gago, Hamza Mohamed, and others. Sheila, and a lot of us, eh? But Amusa was unique. If you see Amusa playing, you will like it. You admire him. He was an all-round player. Amusa was a good shooter. He was a good dribbler and a playmaker. Amusa is the greatest player the North has ever produced. The Black Star went to Brazil. How was Amusa received in Brazil? Amusa in his hotel finds it difficult to come out because the mob was always waiting for Amusa. Amusa, you see him, was the real Pele. If you talk of Ghana Pele, it's Amusa. God the mercy. I played alongside Abedi. Abedi is his time. He was lucky. He was exposed to the world. There were TVs. There were cameras all over the place. People were seeing him live. So the people liked Abedi. He has the charisma, but he cannot compare himself to Amusa Gbadamosi I saw.
In 1969, when Santos of Brazil took on Accra Hearts of Oak at the Accra Sports Stadium, Amusa Gbadamosi was the star man for Hearts of Oak. He scored in that game that ended 2-2. And after the game, he had a discussion with Pele, a discussion that went really, really well. Pele loved the man.
These days, he is back where it all started in Bimbila, in his humble beginnings, and in this house, here in the Northern Region.
There are moments in every player's career that is noted as the most important. And for Gbadamosi, it was that game against Brazilian powerhouse Santos in Accra. The photo of him handing over a smock to the legendary Pelé has become one of the most iconic yet unknown Ghanaian football photos. Amusa has great memories from that day.
Well, one even, for instance, meeting Pelé of Brazil was one of those. Because I had that name Pelé too before they came to Ghana to play. So it was quite interesting. But unfortunately to me, their goalkeeper wasn't all that good. Because the sort of goal I scored him, he shouldn't have allowed me to score that sort of a goal. Pelé was Pelé. And I must say, Ghana's Pelé was also Ghana's Pelé. See, it was great.
At Hearts of Oak, Amusa was the outright star. He started his career in Tamale, but it was at several football meets that officials from Hearts of Oak saw him and expressed interest. An official from the club visited his home in Bimbila to convince his parents to choose the capital club. Before then, he had played one game for Nkrumah's team, the Real Republicans.
Black Stars were to play Real Madrid. I was 62. So he brought me and George Alasa to watch that match in Accra. Then after that, they brought me to Republicans. I didn't like Accra. Okay. At that time, because I was enjoying everything in Tabari. So I played for them against Azakes in a league match. And I was staying at the director's house in Osu. I was not used to Accra.
The Hearts of Oak Kotoko rivalry did not just start. There's an age-old bad blood between the two clubs. Gbadamosi moved to Kumasi Asante Kotoko in 1971 and got a fair share of antagonism from the Hearts faithful.
I went to Kotoko.
How did the Hearts of Oak fans take it at the time?
I didn't even tell them I was going anywhere. So before they heard about what, you know, I was in Kumasi. It was after Olympics, when they came to play Olympics in Accra. Because I left us, I didn't follow them. I know our supporters very well. So I was in Kumasi when they came and played the Olympics.
Amusa was a people's person. He believed in where he hailed from, his heritage. The skills he performed on the pitch were exceptional. He was a gifted player. He was one of those players many looked forward to seeing on match days. His time with the national team, though, barely bore fruits of his quality. In 1968, at the Summer Olympic Games in Mexico City, a tournament he believes Ghana should have performed way better in, he was one of the most important players in the team. There was him, Jones Atukwefio, Sami Sampene, Malik Jabir, Ibrahim Sande, Johnny Shen, and the mystical Robert Mensah. That team was eliminated in the group stages after facing Israel, El Salvador, and Hungary. But Gbadamosi believes they could have done better.
Some players were so jealous about me that they got angry.
From what you're saying, it was just some infighting in the team that led to that.
Oh, yes. If some of those players who are still alive will talk the truth.
Amusa lives in Bimbila now, 147 kilometers from the Northern Region's capital, Tamale. This is where his rise to stardom in the 60s and 70s started, but not in comfortable conditions. He admits that this is a far cry from where he was three decades ago. Now living a very simple life, losing his eyesight by the day, Amusa wants a proper structure at the Professional Footballers Association of Ghana for retired footballers. Badamosi will be 79 in April. He lived his football life to the fullest, but in the face of all the challenges now, he still has the wherewithal to crack a smile. If anyone asks of football legends from here, the list is long enough, but always remember the man from Bimbila, Amusa Badamosi. From Bimbila, in Ghana's northern region, this is Yao Fosulabi for the Sunny Side of Sports.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers one of the legendary voices at the Voice of America, Uncle Ted Roberts, who died March 5th due to illness at the age of 79. Uncle Ted was the very popular host of our weekend Nightline Africa show before he retired from the Voice of America. Uncle Ted was a good friend and a good mentor. In addition to his stellar work behind the microphone, Uncle Ted taught for 42 years at Howard University here in Washington. 8 years ago, a retirement celebration was held for Uncle Ted, and he invited me to speak. My speech began with the following: is everything okay? Is everything all right? I hope so. This was one of Uncle Ted's signature on-air phrases. Two short questions followed by a short three-word sentence. I hope so. The key word for me is that middle one, hope. Whether Uncle Ted was broadcasting Nightline Africa, working with young students at Howard, or working with VOA colleagues in our office, Uncle Ted was very much about hope. And so, Uncle Ted, thank you for the inspiration. Thank you for the hope. And I hope you rest in peace.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Turning to tennis, Swiss great Roger Federer is making his long-awaited return to the court this week following double knee surgery last year. The 20-time Grand Slam singles champion is making his comeback at the Qatar Open in Doha. Joining us with more details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. A lot has happened since Roger Federer's last competitive match in 2020. Two knee surgeries kept him sidelined for 13 months amid a global pandemic, and his ATP ranking dropped out of the top five to number six in the world. And as Federer marks his return to the court in Doha, he tells reporters he didn't expect to be away for so long.
Finally, I'm back on the tennis court again, working out, playing sets, playing points. It's a true pleasure. It's a privilege, actually, after all this time. I didn't expect it to go as long as it did, but it did. Now we are where we are, and I'm so excited to be back on the on a match court, you know, in a few days here, and I'm really curious to find out how it's going to go. There's still obviously amazing amounts of question marks surrounding you know, my comeback for me personally, and I don't know what to expect. I know that the expectations from my side are extremely low, and I'm just very happy that I'm playing a tournament again regardless of the outcome of this event.
Federer says he is pain-free going into the Qatar Open, a tournament where he has seen success as a three-time champion. 18 years after making his debut in Doha, Federer says it's good to be back to test his readiness for the tour.
I must be feeling good enough, otherwise I wouldn't put myself in this position. So I'm really curious to find out how it's going to go. I really don't know myself yet. Any result's a good result at this point. I have a tough draw, I feel, but let's be honest, any draw would have been a difficult draw after not having played for a year. But practice the last few weeks, I really feel like I've been really good. So that puts me in a positive mindset for my first round here in Doha.
Federer, who is tied with Rafael Nadal on a record 20 Grand Slam singles titles, has not played a match since he lost to world number one Novak Djokovic at the Australian Open in 2020. Those three men make up what is called the Big Three rivalry. The trio have dominated men's singles tennis for the past two decades, and Federer's side of the story is not over yet. The 39-year-old says he had no thoughts of retiring during his recovery, and he believes his time away from the court might actually help prolong his career.
It's definitely worth it to go through all that pain, you know, but the goal was, you know, this is not, I'm going to go out. I'm not happy with my knee. We're going to fix it and we're going to come back. For me, there was no other story to it. And rehab wasn't as hard as maybe people make it seem, even though the people around me are very impressed how I go about it. But for me, it's only but normal to be really, really professional about it.
Federer received a bye in the first round of the Qatar Open, which gives him time to practice before his opening match on Wednesday. Federer says because of his absence, he expects every opponent to be tough, so he plans to pace himself and take it one match at a time.
I'm really here just to test it all out, see how it goes, and go day by day. And my first goal is really from now all the way till Wimbledon, use this time the best I can to build up step by step. I basically don't know what I'm going to do next week yet, so I'm just going to really take it one day at a time. I have not had any setbacks the last few months, and that's been really positive for me, and that makes me believe that you know, good times are ahead. But you know, matches are different to practice, so I still got a long way to go.
As you heard, Federer already has his sights on Wimbledon, but his early test will be in Doha at the Qatar Open that is now underway through March 13th. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Sporty greetings. This is Ike Diagu, captain of the Nigerian men's national basketball team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The National Basketball Association will resume its regular season Wednesday night with two games after taking a break for its annual All-Star Game in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, there's almost always a lot of offense and little in the way of defense during the NBA All-Star Game, and this year's exhibition contest was no exception. A total of 320 points were scored, and the NBA's two-time league most valuable player for the Milwaukee Bucks was named the All-Star Game's MVP. The AP's Gary McKillops reports from Atlanta.
Giannis Antetokounmpo hit 16 of 16 from the field and scored 35 points to lead Team LeBron to a 171-50 win over Team Durant in the NBA All-Star Game. Antetokounmpo was also 3 of 3 from the three-point line. The Milwaukee Bucks forward said this about his big night.
When you're around guys like Dave and Steph and Chris Paul, it's just easy. Nobody's worrying about me. I'm just playing one-on-one.
Damian Lillard added 32 and Steph Curry 28 for Team LeBron's Western Stars, while Bradley Beal led Team Durant with 26.
It was amazing. It was amazing just to be able to be out on the floor with 20-plus other guys in the league who are phenomenal at what they do, and for me to start. And that, you know, that felt great. Was happy about it.
Gary McKillops, Atlanta.
And that wraps up the March 9th. today's edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.